It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mites, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
Well, hey, so glad you joined us for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, I'm so excited about tonight's guest. Valdo Villegas will be joining us in just a few minutes. He's an entomologist, an awesome gardener, and rose grower extraordinaire. If you don't follow him on Twitter, Valdo Villegas, or on Facebook, be sure and connect with tonight's guest on social media. You'll be glad you did. Hey, Teresa, how's it going tonight?
Hey, well, it's a little cold here tonight, but we're so excited that Valdo's here to talk about his favorite things, roses, pruning, and the most favorite of all, bugs. But before we bring Valdo on, I want to remind our listeners the many ways you can access this podcast. Right here on Blog Talk Radio, via our website on rosechatradio.com, through iTunes or Stitcher apps, and all of these are absolutely free. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, Valdo will join us. So stay tuned. There's more Rose Chat Radio coming your way.
It's time to order roses for spring delivery, and S&W Greenhouse has just what you need. From knockouts to hybrid teas, S&W has the best. From Weeks, Star Roses and Plants, and new this year, a beautiful collection of David Austin English roses that are sure to make your garden the envy of the neighborhood. Check them out online at sw-greenhouse.com. Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey, well, it's time for us to get started. Hey, Valdo, welcome back to Rose Chat.
Hey, thank you very much for inviting me, Teresa.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. Valdo, you describe yourself as a rose nut, and if I remember correctly, you told me a few weeks ago that you had over 1,000 roses. Is that true?
I have between 2,000 and 3,000 roses.
Oh, surely. I heard that wrong, didn't I? 2,000 to 3,000. Oh, my goodness.
Wow. When we talk about thousands of roses,
I can feel Mr. G getting really nervous that my couple of hundred are going to be turned into thousands. So I got to be careful. How did you
get really
started growing roses?
I really don't know how many roses I have.
Say that again, Baba.
I really don't know how many roses I have, but I know I have about 2,000 in the ground and another 1,000 in pots.
Oh, my goodness.
That is impressive. How did you get started?
I started in the late 70s when we bought this house, our first house, and my wife was the rosarian. She was the one that kind of chose the roses, and I did all the work. And then in 82 or so, we joined the Rose Society, and then we... that's when I took on the hobby.
So your hobby just exploded. How long did it take you to get to 3,000 or even the first 1,000?
Well, the 3,000 has been in the last 4 years.
Mm.
Before then, in the other house, it was a quarter of an acre, and we had over 700 roses, more like somewhere between 700 and 800 roses in the ground. And basically, I had no place to garden. anymore. So then my wife sold this property, and we bought it 4 years ago, and then we moved here, and then 1 acre was for her and 1 acre for me. And the 1 acre, I have all the roses. And the other in the other acre is just basically a pasture for a horse that we share with our neighbor.
Well, it's nice to have a horse when you have that many roses, so you'll have something to feed them.
Well, the you know, the area has a lot of horse people, a lot of horse stables. So my neighbors bring me plenty of horse poop whenever I want it.
Nice to have a good fresh supply, isn't it?
Yes. So I use lots and lots of horse manures for in the rose garden. In fact, I put about anywhere from 2 to 4 4 inches of horse manure. And there's always a fresh cover of horse manure in the rose beds.
Although I wanted to ask you about that. You've got that horse manure set up for a while, don't you, before you actually apply it to your bed?
No. I usually just, believe it or not, I use it between a month after it's been dropped by the horse. Every 2 weeks, I get a pickup load of horse manure.
Oh, good.
And then I have the my neighbor drop it in various places in the yard. And right now, I have it right next to some beds. And as soon as the pruning process is all done, then they're going to get a new cover of horse manure. But I don't wait for months for that horse manure to be composted. And I have a big problem with a lot of the master gardeners because they believe that manure should be composted for several months before they are used. I've been using it for 4 years fresh off the horse. And I've been having excellent results.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, I won over 100 trophies this year in the rose shows.
I'm looking at your picture on Facebook, and you've got all these roses around you. Tell us about some of those awards that you won this year.
I won some of the mini and mini flora queens. At least two shows, and basically, you know, a lot of the collections, the challenge classes, you know, like the we have in Sacramento, we have one called the Rainbow of Miniatures, and that's usually one of my favorites. Basically, you put a miniature roses around a crescent shaped platform, and it has some vials, and then you place your roses in the color imitating the rainbow. So that's called rainbow of colors. So you go from a white to a purple, or a white to a black, and then all the colors in between. So generally, I start with a mauve, and then I go through the reds and oranges, and then I end up with a white at the end. And they're usually, I think, 7 roses. And then the Ben Williams I won this year at the district level. I would have won the Moore Trophy for miniature roses, but I forgot to put one more rose in there. I took it out because it was given to the center. And then I took it back and I forgot to put it back.
Ooh.
So I had 6 beautiful roses and it was supposed to be 7.
Oh.
And anyway, I had the 7th rose, but I never put it in.
Oh, that's just crushing.
Yeah.
And it sounds so beautiful. I've never seen that. I'd love to see that. It sounds so beautiful.
And then I usually win the bouquets, the big bouquets, the small bouquets, or the miniature rose bouquets. So I want when I exhibit in from all garden roses to the hybrid teas, Fuller Bandas, and I win in all the classes, not just in miniature roses. But I started off as being into miniature roses. For many years, I was known for my miniature roses.
So is there an award that's a goal for you that you haven't won yet? Is there something that you're aspiring to that you haven't captured yet?
Well, I have only stayed at the district and at the local level. I have not competed at the national level. And that's because in the past I was too busy with work. And generally, whenever I travel to a distant place, I always want to go a few days ahead of time to do business or to visit with friends, and I could never take roses with me because, you know, it would be several days before I could attend the convention.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one thing that I might want to do is I might want to enter the district. The national convention classes. But I'm very happy at the district and at the local level, as it is.
Well, you've done very well. And, Baldo, for those of us who follow you on Facebook, you've been entertaining us with pictures from your recent pruning of your roses. And, you know, I find that many people are afraid to prune their roses. So you have so many to prune that we're just sure that you developed some sort of techniques that we all could benefit from. So can you tell us about your pruning process?
Yeah. I use the same pruning process for all my roses, okay? Whereas
all
a lot of people, yes, the same process, I use it for all the roses, from all garden roses to miniature roses, okay? So
mm-hmm.
basically, the process is to, my technique is to prune from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
So from the crown or the bud union up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the most important area of the rose. That's where you're going to get your new wood that's going to give you lots of blooms. So basically, in 30 seconds, I look at a rose, and then I tell you what canes I'm going to take out and which ones I'm going to leave. And basically, I look at the three Ds, dead, disease, damage, canes are taken out. Then I also identify the old wood from new wood. If I have to take a cane, I look at it and I say, okay, is this an old cane or a new cane? If I have to choose, then the old cane comes out. So then I prune the roses in the shape of a vase, okay, so that I can reach into the bud union without getting snagged. So anything that kind of pokes toward the center, I take out. So then I clear the center by doing what I just told you and also taking out the cross, uncrossing the canes, then I do one cane at a time. Okay, so then starting from the bottom up, okay? I start from the bottom, and then if it's an exhibition rose, then I remove all the laterals and I just leave the canes without any laterals, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I prune about anywhere from knee to waist high, and that's California style. We don't
mm-hmm.
have the winter problems that you experience in the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then that's for like hybrid teas or for exhibition roses where I want big, huge blooms. So no laterals on those. Now for shrubs and floribundas where I want a lot of blooms. I leave some laterals. I leave maybe two or three laterals per cane.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's an exhibition floribunda, for instance, then I might treat it like a hybrid tea. Anything that I, if I want a lot of blooms, I leave two or three laterals per cane, and then I just cut them off at waist high. Now, for all garden roses, basically, I do the, I go to the bottom and then get up the dead, diseased, damaged canes, uncurl some of the canes, get some of the old wood out, leave just mainly the new canes, and then I work on the frame. I tend to leave them a little bit bigger. You know, some of them are, can be 6 feet tall. And I treat most of them as shrubs. So then I leave my old garden roses pretty high, actually. I kind of look at how they grow, and then I work with the structure of the particular variety. Some roses, like Baron Privot, they might have 6 foot canes, and I leave those canes because that's a good performing old garden rose that will give me fantastic blooms. Whereas something like Rose de Reche is more like a shrub rose, and I treat it like a shrub rose, so I might prune that one at waist high. So that's basically the way I do it. Now, except for climbing roses, and my roses don't take me more than 5 minutes to prune. Any rose in my garden doesn't take me more than 5 minutes to prune.
That's going to be
I average anywhere from 2 to 3 minutes per rose bush.
That's going to be my goal. 5 minutes
and,
per rose.
You know, I tell people my technique, and they can't believe it because once I show it to them, they never go back to pruning from the top down.
So it didn't take all that long to prune 3,000 roses. If it's only taken 5 minutes for each rose, how long did it take to prune this year?
It takes me about a month to prune the roses, mainly because I work about only on sunny days. I work on sunny days, and only when, you know, like from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock, that's when I work. And I take a lot of breaks. So, anyway. Oh, the other thing I do is when I prune, I don't seal the end of the canes. I don't angle the cuts. A lot of people angle the cuts. I don't do that. I think it's a waste of time. If they're angled, fine. I leave all my cuts about half an inch above the bud, and mainly because when you go 1/4 inch above the bud, like everybody recommends, and you angle the cut, most of the times you're going to go too low in one direction, and you're going to get some damage to the cane. So
good.
I find that about half an inch is sufficient. So I aim about half an inch above the bud, and I don't tend to slant the cut.
Right. I do the same thing, Baldo. I've never really found much benefit in it.
Yes. I have some people that kind of challenged me on that, and then I said, okay, there's 2,000 roses in the ground. You go through my rose garden and show me a peg that has died. And then to this day, we haven't found any pegs that have died because of the cut being, too high.
Yeah.
So
well,
to
if it's
me,
working.
Yeah. So I've been doing that for many, many years. Since the early 90s, I've been using that technique from the bottom up, and it's been working for me tremendously.
Do you use the same technique when you prune your David Austin roses, or do you leave them a little bit higher, fiber teeth?
David Austin roses, I leave them pretty high. I leave them maybe at waist high, and I leave a lot of laterals. Okay. Then I have the Floribundas and the David Austin roses in the front of the property because I want them to bloom profusely so that they can make an impact on the passerbys. You know, when you should see all the scritch mark, all the breaking that I hear oftentimes.
Valdo, you mentioned the butterflies. I know you don't just grow roses. Tell us about some of the other plants in your garden and how they're a benefit to your roses.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you asked that question. What I've done is my area of expertise is in biological control of insects and weeds. So one of the things that I did in this property is I wanted to minimize the amount of pesticides that I was using in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one way was to introduce companion plants, plants that do well with roses. So what I did is in the last 4 years, I've been buying a lot of perennial plants that tend to attract a lot of beneficial insects. And what I do is I go to the various nurseries and various gardens in the area that have a tendency of having a lot of perennial and ornamentals. And then I go in there and I look for those plants that attract the most insects. And then being an entomologist, I quickly can identify what type of insects are coming in. And I can recognize which ones are beneficial and which ones are pests because that's my area of expertise. So I can identify those insects, and I do this at the nursery level, you know, when I'm chopping around for plants. I go to those plants, and then I said, that's attracting a lot of beneficials. So I choose those plants, and so I have maybe over 300 plants, perennials, in the garden that have shown me to be the most effective in attracting beneficials. One of them is the yarrow's Achillea. Yarrow is a plant that has a lot of different varieties. I have at least a dozen different varieties of yarrows, and I like those because they attract just about every beneficial there is.
Wow, and I have a lot of...
Yes. So I like that one. I like the salvias. Salvias, they're also very, very fragrant. And then not only that, but they attract birds, and not just bees and wasps, but attract bees. I have a lot of buddleias or butterfly bushes. And again, that's because they attract a lot of beneficial insects.
Mm-hmm.
I have another group of plants called, I can't think of the common name for it. The scientific name is Agastache. I think they call hyssop.
Yes, hyssop.
And they're also very fragrant. They belong to the mint family.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very attracted to beneficials. So those are the main ones that I have in the garden. And I have them everywhere in throughout the one-acre area.
Well, I have been very, very interested in bugs, especially since last summer when I had to deal with the nasty rose midge. And I know you don't have midge in California, but I am curious to know what has been a big problem for you in the rose garden. Has there been anything in California that's been a big problem to the roses?
Well, you know, we had an episode of rose midge in California. We have it's highly localized in California. It's found in Marin and in Sonoma counties in Northern California, and we found it out in around 1997. But we haven't seen any movement of that midge from that general area.
Mm-hmm.
Many people have told me that they have midge, and so I ask them where are you located, and depending on who asks, I have been to several rosarian gardens that they're because they're good friends of mine, and I trust them. And then when I go over there, I see blind shoots, but I don't see the classic midge problems. You know, midge, you can recognize midge because the larvae attack the growing points. The midge lays its eggs right on the tips of roses where the buds would be formed. Mm-hmm. And then the eggs hatch into little maggots, and then the maggots kind of girdled the growing tips, and then those growing tips turn black and die. So it looks like somebody went in there with a torch and torched mm-hmm. your rose, because you see those blackened tips. When I go to friends' gardens, I look for that. I look for the tips that look kind of yellowish, you know, where mm-hmm. They're not quite brown or black, but they're kind of yellowing. And then I cut the tip off, and then generally I take a microscope with me, because then I put them in under a microscope, and then I look for the larvae. And then if I see the larvae, then, we have a positive. Now, my eyes are sharp enough so I can see the larvae without the use of a microscope. But generally I take a microscope with me because, I can show it to somebody. You know, I can show the damage to somebody, and if we find larvae, I can show them the larvae. So anyway, that's how you can diagnose it. Now, what I tell my people in the East Coast that have midge problems is to get themselves some yellow sticky traps and put them in their garden, especially in the spring months. When your roses start to break dormancy, mm-hmm. that's when you should put your yellow sticky traps around your garden, and get quite a few of them. You know, because some of these things you're going to see concentrations of the larvae in certain areas, and then start inspecting those traps when you start seeing buds. Or if you see any, where you expect to see buds, okay? Because mm-hmm. about that time, that's when the midge, the adults, are going to be coming out of the ground. And when you see that, then that you jot that date down in the calendar, and you say, okay, that's when I observed midge coming out of the ground, okay? Mm-hmm. And then what I do is once I have a date, then the following year I go maybe a week or two before, and I make sure that you have some something like imipropyl in the soil, mm-hmm. 2 weeks before the date that you jot down on the ground. But you use that the yellow sticky traps also as an aid to tell you that no midge is coming out of the ground. But when those midges come out of the ground, you have to have the imipropyl in the soil.
Hey, Baldo, this is Chris.
Yes.
We've got a caller from Zone 6. Her name is Crystal, and she's got a couple questions for you. Hey, Crystal, you're live on Rose Chat.
Hi. I just had a couple questions. I have a Zone 6 garden, and I like the roses for their scent. I like the really, really strongly scented ones. I was wondering, you know, what might be a good variety. Also, we have a big problem here with the Japanese beetles. What's a good way to deal with those?
Oh, boy.
What a question.
Well, first of all, let me tackle the fragrant roses first, okay?
Okay.
Secret is a fantastic rose to have for a fragrant rose, and also it's an overall rose that I score very highly in my evaluation sheets. It has very good scent, and also you can use your roses for exhibition and also for bringing to the home. Another rose is Firefighter. firefighter is one of those that you must have. I mean, you have to have that one.
Oh, yeah?
So it's able, yes. That's a dark red rose. And, you know, if I were you, I would have several. If you're into really exhibition roses, I mean into, not exhibition, fragrant roses, okay, because that's very, very fragrant. So secret, there's another rose called Memorial Day. That's a pinkish rose that has these huge blooms with the petals are kind of rippled, and it's also very, very fragrant. Those three, to me, are very disease-resistant and also very, very good to have. For a yellow rose, I totally forgot the name. I got one of those. I'm showing my age. I'll get back to that in a little bit. The Aspen roses are fantastic roses for scent. I have over 100 varieties of Aspen roses, and you can't go wrong with any of them. The important thing about Aspen roses, you're in Zone 6.
Yes.
Anybody grow Aspen roses in your area or English roses?
I don't personally know any. I don't know of any.
Okay. Those might be, you might have to treat them a little bit differently. You might have to make sure that they're winter protected, by putting the bud union 4 inches under the ground, below ground level,
mm-hmm.
or mulching the heck out of your, bud union so that it doesn't freeze in your area. I think are you in Minnesota?
No, we're in Ohio.
Ohio. Oh, yeah, you can grow Aspen roses in Ohio.
Okay.
You should be okay. You should be okay. The important thing to do about the Aspen roses is to go to public gardens or invite yourself to the rosarians in your area, and you can find rosarians in your area by going to the American Rose Society website, ars.org, and then looking for the Rose Societies in the Ohio state of Ohio, and then there'll be contacts for each of the societies. And then just call those numbers, and then you can mention my name because if they're a consultant Rosarian, they should know me because I used to be chair of the Consultant Rosarian Program for the American Rose Society. Anyway, so I've been, I've met a lot of the Rosarians from Ohio. Anyway, so just tell them that if anybody in the area is growing Aspen roses, and go and visit their gardens, and then choose those varieties that you like. This is very important because with Aspen roses or English roses, the description is not necessarily what you get. In my area, some of the Aspen roses can send canes 6 to 8 feet long.
Ooh.
They're more like climbers.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. But there are some that behave themselves very, very nicely. And you want to get those that behave themselves very nicely and they make a nice bush.
Okay.
And the only way you can select those roses is by going up to somebody's garden and then looking how they grow.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Any ideas about the Japanese beetle?
Okay. For Japanese beetle, one of the solutions that we're hoping to have was the milky spore. Have you applied milky spore to your garden?
We have tried, they're little bags that
yes.
you hang around the garden. We've tried those things.
No. They're not little bags. You buy this material, and depending on the material, you either drench, you mix it in water, and then you drench it in the soil, or
mm-hmm.
you might, if it's a powder, you spread it with like a fertilizer spreader into your lawn area, and then you it's a live bacteria, okay?
Oh.
So you spray in the spores of this bacteria, and then you water it into your lawn. And then the bacteria goes into the ground. It's a living thing, okay? And then as the Japanese beetle lays its eggs on the grass, they feed on the on the roots of the grass, and then they ingest some of the bacteria. This is the bacteria in the milky spore. And then they die from it, and then in the process, they multiply the bacteria. So it's a very efficient system. So that's what I would recommend that you apply. The other way is to use pesticides, and I hate to use pesticides.
Yeah.
So I would go with the milky spore first.
And I will definitely have to try that.
Okay, that's for long-term control, okay?
Okay.
And then encourage your neighbors to use it too.
Yeah.
Because the more neighbors you get in to use it, the better control you're going to get over the whole neighborhood or the whole town.
Yeah.
In some areas, some rose societies, what they have done is that they contact the local universities and extension services, and then they get people like me to show them how to get those the infected larvae, and then we go out into a turf area. We dig up some of the larvae that are sick, and then you take some of those sick larvae to your, and then you grind them up in your lawn, and then that way you get the bacteria in your area, and then the larvae that might be in your lawn will get infected.
Wow!
But you can buy. Well, see, I used to do this kind of stuff in my previous life as a state entomologist. I brought up a disease from Mexico that was a virus that was killing the caterpillars in parts of northern Mexico, and I brought this disease under permit, and then I used this what I did is that when I got back to my house, I used my blender. I didn't tell my wife what I was doing. I used my blender. Then I put the larvae in there, and then I grind them, and then I used a hose and sprayer, and then I went back to where I was having the problem with these caterpillars, and then I introduced this disease, and then within a week's time, all those caterpillars were history. And
wow.
Then from there, I got more of the larvae that were sick, and then pretty soon I used it all throughout the state of California. And I basically saved the grape industry from collapse. Because
that is amazing.
Yeah.
That is a great story. Good job.
Incredible. Crystal,
I still didn't tell
so
my
much.
Wife what I was doing with the blender.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
Also, we have another question from our chat room on the buddleia. How do you trim, cut back your buddleias?
Oh, my buddleias?
Mm-hmm.
I cut them about, they're in my backyard. They're bordering a fence, a four-foot fence. So what I do is I cut the buddleias 4 or 5 feet high, and I have them every 10 feet in my backyard. I have like
mm-hmm.
20 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just basically leave them 4 to 5 feet high. And they when they bloom or when they grow up, they're probably 10 to 15 feet high. And I mean, the whole place is just life with hummingbirds and butterflies and
mm.
of every insect you can think of.
Yep.
Mm. Well,
And I have all the different colors that you can find in the Badleas. I have probably 20 varieties of Badleas.
Oh, my goodness. Now,
yeah.
We've got another question from our chat room here on Blog Talk Radio.
Sure.
Rebecca is asking if you hybridize your own roses, or are you creating roses yourself?
Back in the 90s, I did some hybridizing, and I have a little rose that I introduced through Michael's Miniature Roses called Baby Ballerina, and it's something that I did by crossing a polyanther. I can't think of the name of the polyanther with a miniature rose, and I got this beautiful single rose that is probably a polyanther more than a miniature rose. It's called Baby Ballerina, and it's one of those that is a ground cover. It could be a ground cover, and it's bulletproof. I mean, there's no disease on it. Very, very healthy. And in the spring, it just has jillions of roses on it.
Wow. Now, is that still in commerce?
I have it, and I probably will give it to I'm going to try to give it to for the love of roses and see if Richard can get it out again. Michael's Miniature Roses in Sacramento had it. You know, I gave it to him as a, you know, because he, Michael Fisher at that time was having a new nursery, and he was a good friend of mine, so I said, hey, Michael, he's a... an introduction. Why don't you feature this in your nursery? And anyway, there was some a few people got it, but it didn't get wide acceptance as you know, because it was a local nursery.
Yeah. Well, when you use the term bulletproof, you know, I want that one in my garden.
We're all ears at that point.
Yeah.
Baldo,
yeah.
One of the things you just barely touched on was your evaluation process. Can you tell our listeners about what you've been doing over the past year in evaluating your roses?
Yes. And this is a very, I feel very proud of, because I'm one of the few rosarians that is doing this. And I do this because of, you know, every consultant rosarian is supposed to be doing a roses in review project in September. That's when they're due. And you're supposed to be evaluating new roses as they're introduced. You're supposed to be evaluating them for exhibition or for disease, vigor, and so forth. So what I did is I have a checklist of all the roses that are planted in the garden. And I can very easily tell you what roses I have, where they're located. And I have the whole history of the rose, okay, where I bought it, how much I pay for it. And then, of course, I get all that information that about the rose, parentage, everything from Modern Roses or from the website in the ARS website. So then what I do is I have some columns in Excel. It's an Excel data sheet. I have some columns, and then one column is for size, and that translates to vigor. The other one is for black spot, another column for powdery mildew, another column for rust, and then another one for miscellaneous. So then every fall of the year, and I do it in October and November, I go through the garden, and then I look at each rose, and I said, okay, what have you done for me lately? Okay, I talk to the rose.
Yeah.
And then I said, okay. So then I look at the rose, and I said, okay, you're about 4 feet high, and you're 4 feet wide. Okay, you're probably normal for this. This is probably a floribunda or a hybrid tea. If it's a mini flora, and I say, hey, you're pretty vigorous. The size means vigor, okay? If I look at the rose like Abby's Angel, this is a true example in my garden. I dug it up today. I've had it in the garden for 4 years. And it in the same spot, it only reached 1 foot high by one foot wide.
Ooh.
Well, I have seen Abby's Angels in other gardens that are 3 feet high by 3 feet wide. So needless to say, this was planted in the wrong place. Or maybe there's something wrong with that plant.
Mm-hmm.
So today I dug it up, and I'm going to move it somewhere else to see if it will do better in another place. I also talked to Richard Anthony, and he's going to send me some new plants in June because I love Abby's Angels.
Oh, it's a beauty. It's a beauty.
It's a miniature rose. It's a mini flora rose.
Mm-hmm.
So I go through, and then I score each rose for disease using a zero for a perfect rose, no signs of disease, to one, meaning slight, two, meaning moderate, and three, meaning too much. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody asked me, can you recommend roses that are disease resistant, then I recommend those roses that score a zero or a number one for let's say black spot, or if that's the main disease that they're having problems with. Okay. So for the East Coast, I said, okay, the biggest problem over in the East Coast is black spot, so I'm only going to recommend those roses that only show a zero or a one for black spot. And then those that score number twos or number threes, moderate to severe, I don't recommend those roses. Now, I have a rose called Nancy Jean. Are you familiar with that rose, everybody? Nancy Jean was introduced by Almost Heaven Roses to honor Vernon Ricard's wife, Nancy Jean. And it's a beautiful, it's classified as a miniature rose. It should be a mini flora. It grows in my garden 4 feet by 4 feet wide. Okay, 4 feet high by 4 feet. So it's very, very vigorous. In my garden, every bloom is exhibition rose. It's exhibition.
Oh,
and
my.
With that rose, I can win just about every miniature rose trophy in collections and everything. This year I won probably 10 trophies with it. But it's prone to disease, to black spot and powdery mildew in my garden. So when I look at the Nancy Jean and I say, what have you done for me lately? And then I look at 10 trophies and I said, you've done good.
And I just say, I'll take care of you, you take care of me.
Yeah.
Right.
Even though that rose is very disease prone, I still keep it. But what I have done, because I knew that it was disease prone, I put it away from the rest of the roses. If I need to spray that particular rose, I can do it very easily, okay, without affecting the other roses.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I use in my garden is mainly fungicides because of all the perennials that I have in my garden, a lot of the beneficials show up. They start showing up in late March, early April, and they take care of the aphids, and they kind of, basically, I don't have any bug problems. The only true bug problem that I have in the Sacramento area is a little beetle called the Hoplia beetle. They behave very much like a Japanese beetle, but it's not as bad. is only present for about 5 weeks. Shows up in the at the end of April, and is present for 5 weeks. So during those 5 weeks, I'm out there squishing any hoplia beetle that I see in the garden. But it's not like in have seen in the East Coast, where Japanese beetles, they're like flies. You just can't catch them. The hoplia beetles are very lazy, and they tend to stay on the bloom. So you very easily can just grab them and then just squish them, or if you don't want to do that, you can drop them into soapy water. So
yeah.
That's what I do. Is I have white buckets with some water, with some soapy water in the garden, and then when I get a handful of hoplia beetles, I just toss them in there. Or if I, if I squish them, I just kind of put the remainders in the soapy water. So that's what I do for pest control. The only things that I use in my garden are fungicides, and that's on a very limited basis, just on the roses that need to be sprayed, like Nancy Jean. Okay?
Sounds great. Baldo, we've got a lot of listeners who are just getting started growing roses, and I'd love to hear just a couple of tidbits of advice for someone who's just getting started growing a rose.
Yeah, the main thing to do, and what helped me the most, I contacted the local Rose Society, and then I hooked up with some experienced consulting rosarians that I kind of, I was able to have a friendship with. And in my life, I had a couple great people. One was Mira Humanik, who's she's in her late 70s, early 80s, is in here in Sacramento, in the Sacramento area, and she's a wealth of knowledge. And then there was another person by the name of Wiley Mulder. He passed away a few years back. Wiley and I were fantastic friends. I mean, I would go over to his house, and I didn't have to knock on his door. I would just go in, and and whenever, for instance, I didn't know how to prune roses, so I asked him if he could show me how he pruned his roses. So he says, what time do you get home? I said, 4 or 5. And says, I'll meet you at your house at 4 o'clock. He came over. He wanted to prune my roses. I said, no, Wiley, show me how to do it.
Aww.
And he showed me, how to prune the roses. So get a mentor. Number one, by going to the Rose Societies, okay? The other thing is if you go to the Rose Societies, then you're going to see who has large gardens. Go and visit the gardens. See which roses do the best. Concentrate on those roses that do the best for your area. And then, if you want to go into exhibition, then choose those roses that will give you the best exhibition blooms. But be prepared to pay the consequences, because those exhibition blooms will not be the healthiest necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I have those that are very prone to disease in the front of the garden, so that I can have easy access to them in case I have to spray them. And then, I have a mixture of roses that do very, very, very well. And but again, visit other people's gardens and see what they're doing, learn from them, and then later on, you yourself can be a mentor to other people.
That's right. I think that's part of the great joy of growing roses, is sharing that knowledge base and encouraging others
yes.
to do the same.
Yes, and right now I have great joy when people come to me and ask me to show them how to prune roses, so to help them select roses. I go through my garden, and nobody ever goes empty-handed when they come to my garden.
Oh, I love that. Love that.
I always have a gift for them. I have a few potted roses. Like I say, I have 1,000 roses in the back. And a friend of mine came over during the weekend after we did the pruning demonstration. And I think she went home with about 20 roses.
Oh, good guy you are.
Yeah. Because, you know, when I gave her one, then she said, oh. And then I said, well, let's give you another one.
Chris and I are going to book a ticket and just come see you. We would have a lot of fun in your garden. We both succumb to rose envy, and we love all roses. So we would have a fun time in your garden for sure.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, Baldo, we're running short of time, but we could just talk all night. We just thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Okay. Anytime, Teresa, and I'm open to questions anytime. Just send me an email or contact me through Twitter or Facebook, okay?
Okay. You're inspiring. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Listeners, if you don't follow Baldo, check him out on Facebook. And if you want to identify a bug in your garden, well, you can head over to Baldo's website. It's a website that he calls the buggiest website on the Internet. That website is SactoRose, SactoRose.org. Well, it's hard to believe that we've come to an end of another broadcast, but we'll be back next week with another awesome guest. So until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.